Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
And I remember even years back, my mom used to tell me, open falafel. And I said, but mom, I work in the best restaurant. You want me to do falafel? Falafel was like street food in Israel. It's like having a hot dog cart in a corner, you know? It's the same thing. And I'm like, but it's funny. Until now, she's asking for percentage for an idea. Iranian.
This week, our guest is the talented chef Einat Admani. After growing up in Tel Aviv and going into the army in Israel, Einat came to this country in 1999 and worked for many talented chefs in New York restaurants. Her interest in Israeli street food spurred her to open with her business partner and husband, Stefan Navziger, the seminal and still best falafel joint in New York, Taim. The Taim truck was at the forefront of the food truck movement that swept the nation. They now have two restaurants, in addition, Balabusta and Bar Bolanat, with a third couscous restaurant coming soon. Einat is also the author of Balabusta, Bold Mediterranean Recipes to Feed the People You Love. Taim is about to be rolled out nationally, so look out, America. Taim is coming to your town soon. Welcome to Special Sauce, Einat Admani. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, you're like an honorary member of Serious Eats. We spend so much time eating your food.
Thank you.
It's like, I sometimes see you more than I see my wife.
Oh, my God.
It's great. Anyway, it's so great to have you here. There's so many things I want to talk about. There's so many interesting aspects to your life. But let's start with life at the Admani family table in Israel. What was that
Wow.
like?
So I grew up with a religious Jewish family. And that means we have Friday night and Shabbat. But Friday night, it was starting on Thursday afternoon, the cooking for the old Shabbat. So since the religious Jews cannot cook on Shabbat, they need to prepare everything before. So for Shabbat noon, around noon, we have the old slow cooking food that we have it for overnight. But for Shabbat dinner, we have a little bit different. Shabbat dinner would start with my dad was Yemenite. My mom is Iranian that grew up with Iraqi home. And my neighbor
Wow.
was Moroccan. So basically, we have a lot of mix.
You're like a trans Middle Eastern.
Yeah. So we would start with my dad, Yemenite soup. He have to have soup every Shabbat. Then we're going to have fish because it's one of the religious things to have fish on every Friday. So we're going to have some fish. And then after that, my mom will do it with Iranian, like Persian rice. And then it will go with chicken or with beef or both. And then a lot of salad on the table. Of course, challah. You have to have the challah bread. And then not always dessert, but sometimes. But there is a lot of food. And I was part of, you know, helping my mom every Friday.
And, I mean, it sounds like there were so many cultures that came together in your household that, if you had a summit conference of the Admani household and family, you might be able to solve some of the problems of the Middle East.
You think?
I don't know. Or maybe it just could get worse. I'm not sure what would happen. Well, first of all, what was the daily non-Shabbat meal like?
Always rice.
Always rice?
Always rice. I love, until today, rice is one of my favorite. And I think the two grain I really, really like was couscous and rice. Couscous because my neighbor, and an Israel neighbor is like, I call him my second mom, you know, because the door is two apartments in that floor and door is always open.
Right.
And if it's not open, I just open and go and open the fridge there and take whatever I need. And
Got it. Help
her for Shabbat as well when I finish, you know. So it's like, I remember being 8 years old going to my neighbor and a mom was there and doing couscous. So she rolling with her and the couscous. I was so fascinated. I took a stool and I stand in there and I help her. And that was one of, I think, my favorite moment in a culinary career of mine. And so we always have rice. And this is funny because back in the days, even though my mom was a working mom, she's a seamstress?
Seamstress.
Yeah, sorry. So she was always working. She had her own shop, not far, maybe one block away from where we lived. And even though she always cook, we always have warm food. You know, that's a culture of women just start going out to work, you know, and it's like, and the funniest thing is that when she was lack of time, like if she knows she's busy, what we used to eat is schnitzel.
Schnitzel
and Israeli couscous.
So you mean that's why the chicken schnitzel at Balabusta is so good? Because of your mom?
Yeah. Yeah, in Balabusta we do it with cornflakes. I think it's great. It gives some sweet flair into it. But it's, I think it's funny because I look at schnitzel today. It's not so easy. You need to have a station of bread in, you know, and you need to, it's not a easy, it's not a fast food. But that was our fast food. It's ptitim, which we call it here Israeli couscous, and some salad, always salad. Israel are very, very big with vegetable. And I think when I always ask people what they like about Israeli cuisine, they said, oh, they're doing with vegetable magic. Like, you treat vegetable very different than anywhere
else.
Right,
and there are so many, like, even at Taim, there are so many salads.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it's beet salad, carrot salad, or whatever. It's
very
centric.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's central to your cooking. So it sounds like since you were fascinated by couscous being made by your neighbor at the age of 8, that food was almost instantly a passion.
At the beginning, I would my mom would slave me around and I hate it. So she would let me do the worst job. For example, picking up through rice. So you get a big, like a stainless steel, not even, it was aluminum tray, huge one, and there is like 0.5 kilo to 1 kilo of rice, and you need to go with 2 fingers, one by one, to see that there is, all the rice are even, they don't have black dots. I know it sounds crazy, but that's what I used to do as a child. And then peeling fava beans for hours, and then breaking pomegranate, 2 cases in Rosh Hashanah, before the holidays, I used to break 2 cases of pomegranate.
So it's funny for you, people do that when they just start working in restaurants.
Prep.
You were doing it at home.
Prep, yeah. I was prepping, checking the beans and like all the kind of labor intensive. That's what I used to do. And then slowly she would let me. Actually, she never really, really let me. Until today, I go in and I try to cook in a kitchen and it's impossible. She always like above my shoulder checking that, you know, I'm like, oh, my God.
So she took a lot of pride in her cooking.
Absolutely.
And you take, obviously, a tremendous amount of pride in your cooking.
Yeah.
So that is something that, you know, that she instilled in you.
Cooking was a very essential in a family, and my dad, he passed away 2 years ago, and he loved food. It was enjoyable for me to see him, how he enjoy everything I cook for him. He was really appreciated.
That's great.
So
that's great. And so, at what moment did you think maybe I could cook for a living?
I used to live in Germany, actually, for 4 years.
Oh, yes, I read that. I read for 4 years?
Yes, I lived in a car.
According to your biography, you lived like a gypsy.
I was a gypsy.
Is that politically correct?
It's not politically, but it's correct.
Right.
So, yes, I lived in an RV, traveled all around Germany from Bavaria to the north. Also went around Europe a little bit and selling, like, all kind of things around festival. And that's what I did for 4 years.
Not food and non-food?
Nothing to do with food.
So trinkets, T-shirts,
like,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Like it would be ties. It would be jumping dogs. It would be like every, like it start with picture. And then in December, it's finished. Then I used to go to Thailand, stay there for 2 months in one island. And
you were a hippie.
Totally. Absolutely, yeah. Staying in Thailand, I've been 8 times. Every off season, I used to go and just stay there. It was so nice.
Stay where?
And back then in Kopangan, and then Kopangan became very touristic. But back then, it was no roads. Thailand was very raw.
So
in
the
early 90s, it was
so
really
that,
nice.
That was your form of rebellion. And this was after you...
Rebellion started at 15. But yeah, totally, yeah.
To be exact, it started at 15... Then at what point did you go into the army?
And then 18 to 20. And right after I tried college, didn't work for me. Basically, I want to show my parents that I can. So I got all exam was beautiful. And I came home and I said, you know what? I'm not dumb. If I want, I really can. But I don't. I cannot sit. I cannot sit too long. I need to go ahead. Bye. No, it's really I won knowledge, all you know, but it was very hard. 2 months in college, and then I said, okay, I'm
right.
Out of here, and I went to Germany.
But first you had to prove to your parents that you
totally,
could get
yeah,
good grades.
Totally, yeah, because they always,
grades.
Like, put me down. Oh, you need college, you need education. I'm like, okay. So I want to show them. Basically, I want to prove them. Till now, I am trying to prove.
And you went to Germany by yourself?
Yes. Actually, I was so poor. I had money only for Switzerland. And I took hitchhiked from Switzerland to Leipzig, which was East Germany. It is East Germany.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's pretty intense.
And East Germany was really different than today.
Yes.
It was 2 years after the wall
came down.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
And so what did you discover about yourself in Germany?
Wow, a lot of things. That my center is cooking. I actually found that even before in the military it was strong, because I started as a driver, a pilot's driver in Air Force in one division. And slowly when they figure out that I can cook, I remember all the general and everybody want me always to cook. So I've slowly, from driving them around, I was like the private chef there. And I loved it. It was so fun. And then in Germany, I just realized when all my EP's friend, when they're having all RVs, I used to go inside and check what they have in the tiny pantry. And I would cook and I would do, I don't want to say magic because the product and it was so many limitations, but I would cook out of nothing. I will take one can from here, one fresh something, and then I will make dinner for everyone.
So you mean you were the executive chef for an RV park?
Exactly, pretty much.
Okay, I mean, there's not a lot of people who can claim that.
So basically, I think after 4 years, I live also in Amsterdam for a year. And I think I was too young to live in Amsterdam back then. And then I left after around 8 months. I said, no, I'm back to Israel. But I remember I asked myself what I can do that I'm not going to get bored. I see all my friends that I was already around 25. They do something. Oh, they're in college because, you know, in Israel, we start university much after. Like we finish military around 21 or 22.
So that's when you start school.
And then, yeah, usually you start here at 18
or
19.
Exactly.
But in Israel, you're going to military for 2 or 3 years. It depends if you're female or male. And then usually most of Israeli go and travel for a year. So they're going to India or South America. It's the two main destination. For me, it was Germany. I didn't have money to get all the way to India. So I realized that there is one thing I can do on a daily basis I will never get bored, is cooking. And that's, I went back to Israel, went to a culinary school. I was sure it's a very short program. As I said,
because you'd get bored if it was, say, 6 months.
Actually, it's the only time I was very, I was all.
You were happy in a classroom.
Absolutely, yeah.
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 And so then you started cooking in Israeli restaurants?
So I cooked in one of, back then it was, I think, so the funny things that when the end of, you know, the school, the principal asked you where you want to go. And I said, I'm going to go to Karen. And he laughed and mocked me in front of all the class and said, yeah, they would let you peeling potato for 2 months and then you're going to come back and cry that you don't have
and
a job.
What was the
That's
name of the restaurant?
Karen. Karen was back then one of the most prestige restaurants, like very hard to get in. It was like, I would say like French Laundry, similar.
Got it. In Tel Aviv.
In Tel Aviv. It's between Tel Aviv to Jaffa. And it was, Karen was a very interesting place. It was also a beautiful, a Templar colony with a four floors on a... On the it was gorgeous, and really, the chef is very famous today, always been, but he's really, really good. So I remember that I went with resume. Back then, no cooks going with resume in Israel. And I remember I put makeup. I almost never. So I put makeup. I remember exactly what I was wearing until today. Shaking down, going with resume, asked to do an internship over there. And it was a woman sous chef, which was also very rare back then.
And very lucky.
I was lucky.
Yeah.
To have a woman sous chef. And she said, oh, resume, that's nice. Nobody ever came with a resume here. I'm like, wow. And you know what I wrote? I wrote import export in Germany. This is actually, it was a little bit true because I used to go to Central America and bring like pulseras to bring like
bracelets
from silk. So,
so
I was import export. Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
You were an import export executive.
So, yes. Yeah, so I worked there actually inside my stage, like in the 2 months, I already promoted from appetizer to feast station, which was really, so it was really nice to go back to the principal. And when he asked each kid what, you know, and I said, I have a job in Karen. So it was nice.
And from
I worked there 2 years. I met my first husband there. We came to, we came to New York together. We've been here 3 years. I went back to Israel. We went to get married. Got divorced, come back. Yeah.
And then started and then, working in New York restaurants.
Yes, yes. So I work here for probably 10 years before I opened my place.
Wow.
Around 5, 7 years.
That's so interesting because most apprenticeships now for chefs, if they're 3 years now, that's a long time.
I know.
And so for you really learned your craft.
And it still took me 8 years to call myself a chef. I was, when people say, I used to say cook. I still say cook. I still, Balabusta, you will see them. They would almost never call me a chef. I'm mama.
They don't do yes, chef, no, chef.
Oh, my God, no. But it took me a while, you know, I see kids getting out of culinary school and they call themselves chef. No.
Yeah.
It's a different time, you
yes.
know. I'm a kind
yeah,
of
nobody
old
would
schooler.
Do that. It's funny. We just had Alex Guarnaschilli on the show.
Uh-huh.
And she did a 7-year apprenticeship in France.
Yeah.
And now you're right. Nobody would do a 7-year apprenticeship.
Oh, my God, no. 2-3 years and they want to be head chef.
Right, right. Then they want to be on TV.
And then they want to be on TV and they want to be a star. Yeah, it's all.
Yeah. So what was it like coming to the States, working in serious restaurants, and you worked in...
I work at Boulet. Yeah, I work at Danube. And then I work
David Boulet's German restaurant.
Yeah. And then I work at Patria, which I love that restaurant.
For Douglas Rodriguez?
Yeah, it was Andrew after him. But
got
yes.
it.
And I work at... I start with Bolo. Bolo was my first restaurant.
Wow, working for Bobby Flay.
Yeah, he was
his
my first
Spanish
chef.
Restaurant.
Yeah.
So
and Tabla with Floyd.
Floyd. And so what was it like coming here, working as a young woman cook?
I loved it. I love attention. So if I'm in the men world, it's nice because I get much more attention. And I love that being, you know. So I just found it these days a little bit hard. Back then, I didn't see any. I have to say, just people ask me a lot about a woman in the men world and in this industry specifically. And I'm like, I used to say that the only difference is what between the legs and that's it. Like I never felt, I used to carry pots. I was very strong. I've been in military for 2 years. So I have this kind of like discipline and I was.
Well, that was the thing is that you were a badass even before you got to the kitchens. And that probably made it easier.
Yeah. But today I see, you know what? This is a funny thing. The first restaurant I worked in New York, I met a woman sous chef. Oh, she was executive chef back then. And she said, I would never have kids or get... I think she was married or have a boyfriend, but she said, I would never have kids because it will interfere with my career. And as a woman from Israel, that family is a very center. And I was like, you know, I'm not judging anymore. I have 2 kids, so I totally understand women that don't want to have kids. But I'm joking. But I was really shocked. I remember it still echoing in my head for years after. And I said, I will make a difference. I will have a husband. I will have kids. I want to have kids. And I will still, like, can succeed in this career. It can go together. It's
yeah.
possible.
But I guess you have to accept that there are going to be many days when one of the balls you are juggling is going to drop.
No, I know, but it's I think
you just accept that.
I think we build it slowly in a way that today, like last summer we've been 2 months in Brazil straight, and this summer we've been all Europe for 2 months. So I think we build the business in a way to have around us people, like great people that we can share as well our, you know, fortune with them
and you
financially
can,
wise.
Yes, and you can be confident that they
yes,
can handle
exactly.
things. So you have 2 kids, right?
Yes.
They're 8 and 10.
Liam is 10 and Mika, she's 7.
Wow. And you seem to very seamlessly sort of go back and forth between work and home. And I'm sure
yeah.
it's much more difficult than that. But you're saying that the way you make it work is by having teams at the restaurants
absolutely.
That can be independent and that you have absolute faith in.
And I also train my kids as well to be much more easy and like they're always with people. We always have people at home. We always do dinners. So they're very easy. And I remember when I opened Bolognati, it was so tough. The first 6 months was hell.
That was your second restaurant.
Yes. And I would bring them. So I want Shabbat for me. It's very important. I'm not religious at all, but I still keep my Friday night. So Friday is even Steph, which is not Jewish. It's still I force him. He can never work on Friday night, and this is a family thing. So I have like between 10 to 20 people in my home every Friday, and I'm cooking. So I remember with Bolognata, what I remember I did once challah in Bolognata, and I just tell the kids to come over. So just Steph brought them and we did Shabbat while I'm working.
Yeah.
So that's like, so we juggle.
So you worked for a lot of the great chefs mm-hmm. in America, you know, between Floyd and Bobby Flay and David Boulay. You had all this restaurant training, and yet the first business of your own was the most crowded, still is the most crowded falafel place I've ever been in, Taim, the mm-hmm. first Taim location. What possessed you to do that? Was it
It's funny because all chefs today, that's what they want to do, a fast casual concept, because they realize that working so hard in a fine dining, it's penny money, you know, there is no money. You work so hard and it's like the profit can be max of 10% if you lack, you know, it's really tiring and draining. And if you don't really, really love it, it's like, it's just worthless. So I think everybody do that now. I remember back then I got a lot of, not jokes, but people look at me, oh, I came from all. And I remember even years back, my mom used to tell me, open falafel. And I said, but mom, I work in the best restaurant. You want me to do falafel? Falafel was like street food in Israel. It's like having a hot dog cart in a corner, you know, it's the same thing. And I'm like, but it's funny. Until now, she's asking for percentage for her idea. Iranian.
And so, was it also a matter of that's what you could afford?
Yeah, we opened Tahim with $70,000. You cannot open anything today with that.
Yeah, and you can't open a shoeshine stand for $70,000 in New York.
Absolutely. So, first, back then, I work as a chef in a restaurant in the East Village. So, I got like a chef-ish salary. And Steph worked at Balthazar as a waiter. Absolutely. We saved the money slowly. We have nothing ended to us. We came from very middle class
background.
Yeah. Like Steph's family is very educated, but very not poor, but not don't have money.
Yeah.
So we never got money from family to open anything. We really saved dime by dime to open the first falafel. The first year was a disaster. No, really disaster.
Really,
Steph came home once and said, we're closing. I'm like, and I was pregnant with Liam. And I said, no, you cannot close this place. And he said, we cannot. It's killing us. Like, we make no money. Nobody passing the street. Nobody know about it. We're just losing money. We already loaned from his grandma like $6,000, which was very embarrassing move to do, to pay our employees. We need money to pay our employees and then provers and then... And he said, I can't take it anymore. I'm going back to wait tables. And I was crying, begging on my knees, like really begging on my knees, and said, if you don't believe in your hard work, you believe in my food because it's great and people will notice that.
Wow.
It will take some time, but it will come. Build it, they will come.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I can relate to that because there were so many times at Serious Eats where I'd be like,
I'm out of here.
I can't do it. I refuse to furlough anybody's paycheck because I know they'd start to leave. And it was that same feeling that you expressed to Steph, which is this just can't be. I think what takes over it's not just wanting to win, it's a refusal to lose. It's just like...
I really believe in the food. I test the falafel. I said, this is great. If they would know, they will come. Nobody knows. It's like, I didn't have a carry press back then. You know, nobody knew who I am. I don't have like... I have tons of... I always have a lot of idea because I never really have a PR with me, but I always pitch new things. I always have the idea how to do things and I couldn't do so much because I was pregnant and it was tough at the end of it. And I was really refused. And I said, you have to give it time. And actually, a few months after this conversation, think we had an editor from the New York Mag. I think that's what happened. And wrote about, actually, not even falafel, Sabich story. That's
the
first.
Oh, the Sabich story.
The Sabich
story. We should explain, a Sabich sandwich is one of the great things that you do. So tell everybody what your Sabich sandwich is.
So Sabich is it's my favorite sandwich. And it's funny because I like falafel, but not as much as I love Sabich. And Sabich is basically, it's an Iraqi, the name come, they said few things. They said it's because a guy named Sabich from Iraq that came to Israel, but they have a lot of different, you know, theory.
Yeah.
But Sabich basically, it's Iraqi traditional breakfast. That's what it is. On Shabbat morning, they have like a fried eggplant that they fry the day before, you know, and then they eat it up in the on the hot plate. And it's hard-boiled egg and the amba. And that's the combination, basically, these three things. The amba is like a fenugreek and green mango chutney. And have a very tangy and interesting...
I know, so it's like it's serious seeds because we, you know, we often get food from Taim. One person will always order the sabich.
Yeah, it's so delicious. So in our sabich, we put a little bit hummus, we put a little bit Israeli salad, cabbage, so have some crispy, and then few eggplant, and then the hard-boiled egg, some parsley, hamba, tahini.
So you've had Taim and then balabusta, mm-hmm. and then bar bolonat, mm-hmm. and then you had a restaurant that didn't
work out well. Yeah.
What makes chefs like yourself
to open more restaurants?
Yeah. Like what?
I ask myself that. Yes, I want to open. I have so many ideas to open restaurant. And I would say, to be honest with me, and it's very honest, it's attention. But not just, it's also a challenge. I need a challenge. After a while, you know, when I feel like my place is now, Balabusta is running very well. It's already 6 years. I have a very devoted customer and followers. And Bolognat doing great and is getting better and better. And I'm still working on Bolognat and change the menu. And I feel like very confident with Bolognat now. And then I'm like, okay, what next? What?
So this gets back to your thing about not being bored.
Yeah, I always... You know, I'm working on a second cookbook right now. I'm doing tons of different events, and I'm trying to organize more and more things. And
you're taking, you have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old.
And a 7, and then I like to travel, so we travel a lot as well. And so I always try to do something. If there is like a few weeks that there is nothing going on, I'm like, okay, what next? I need to think about a new project.
Yeah. I want to rewind this conversation to just play back that Taim was failing, you were pregnant, you were leveraged to the hilt, you'd borrowed money from Stefan's
grandma.
Wasn't that a stressful time?
Not for me, for him. No, seriously, that's the thing with our relationship. We've been married now, we're going to be married for 14 years, which is shocking for both. And I think that's what we're doing so well. He get the stress, which I wish he wouldn't, and I never get stressed. I know it's like I have a lot of faith. I believe that everything, even if the worst time, when I closed Combina, it was very, very tough.
Combina, like, was the restaurant that closed.
Yeah, it was like a Israeli with Spanish influences, and I really liked the design, and I really liked it was hard. It's not easy, but. You know, you realize everything going to be fine. Everything going to be okay. That's it. That's
so always, that's just how you're wired.
Always, yeah.
And it's good that, because if you were married to somebody with the same wiring,
I know.
God knows I know, how it could go off the rails.
I know, and he loves it because he's like, sometimes you get upset, I take all the stress. I'm like, you want both of us to be stressful, I think.
No, I have a similar dynamic with my wife, too. So now you're going to open up a couscous restaurant,
yeah.
which you're really excited about. Why?
Very. Oh, my God. Because for 17 years I'm here, I have this crave for this food. And for so many articles I've been interviewed for, they ask me, what is your last meal or last supper? And I said, couscous and mafroum. And they said, what is mafroum? I'm like, this is a Libyan dish. A Jewish Libyan dish of potato that you cut like Pac-Man. You open them and you stuff them with ground beef. And then you kind of sear them a little bit on the side. And then you put them in a tomato sauce. And it's absolutely divine and delicious. And there is a lot of different food in North Africa that people are not aware. And I want to open a place that... it's like a North African Jewish food that you would see in Friday night in Israel.
So it's going to serve mostly those two things?
No, it's going to be... So basically, it's going to be a real couscous. So that's another thing. Where in New York City you find real couscous? You don't.
No.
There is none. Not even in a real Moroccan restaurant, they don't do a real couscous anymore. Or anymore.
Because it's pretty labor intensive.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours. But it's not need to be there. It's like steaming 2 or 3 times, but it's not... It's not as hard. We do that now in Bologna since we open, and we serve it actually with my mom zabzi, which is a chore zabzi. It's Iranian, and the idea, this I said when they asked me what is this, well, I said that dish. It's a couscous for my neighbor.
And what's zabzi?
Zabzi, it's like we do it with short rib, but zabzi, it's like pieces of meat inside green sauce, and this green sauce you have dill and spinach and parsley and cilantro and
it's a little bit like fenugreek. A salsa verde.
No, it's more salsa verde. No, it's much more green, and there is a lot of lemon and Persian lime. It's delicious. It's a little bit lemony and very greeny. It's absolutely great. And this is my mom and the neighbor across the hall.
Got it.
So
you've mentioned just about every country in the Middle East. I think the State Department should hire you. That should be like the gig, because like you've got Morocco covered, Iran, Iraq, Israel,
Yemen. Do a lot of Egyptian and Lebanese food, some Syrian food, yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive. So now you've decided to roll out Taim.
Yeah.
And how did that come about? Because this couldn't be the first time that people have approached you to make Taim the falafel equivalent of Chipotle or something.
Yes, but we got approached many, many, many times. I think one thing that is nice with me and Steph, we're not driven by money. Because if we would, we'd probably be very wealthy right now and like sell Taim or do something with it. But we really want to keep it like, you know, the way we want it. The same concept, the same menu. We want to have the people we love around us. So it was really hard. We have a few options on the way, and we always said, no. And I think we also was very controlling in a way. It was a baby. Steph was like there, like sweat and tears in this place. I think the first 3 years he didn't see Liam much, you know, his son, because he was all about 7 a.m. until midnight he was at Taim. Every day was crazy workaholic. So I think it was very hard for a while to let go and to kind of do any kind of collaboration. And I think we realized after 11 years, we have Taim for 11 years, it's a long time, we realized this is restaurant, don't bring you money. So you work really, really hard. And it's not really what, you know, you can make a living, but it's very hard, especially in New York.
And that's why chefs, as you say, are always looking for fast, casual
now
concepts.
Now everybody, and you see
and
that.
And you had one as your first
exactly. And
place.
Then I opened, I did exactly the opposite. I started.
Right.
So I think we come with interesting investors, and we got amazing director of operation to a company now. We're looking for locations. Everything going to kind of stay the same. We're going to improve I think we're going to improve a lot of things. Have a better structure.
Operation.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. We want to do a line of product as well. That's another thing we're thinking now.
Wow. That's exciting. And the world needs really good falafel, because there's so much bad falafel.
I know.
And the world
true.
Needs to be introduced to Sabish.
I know.
More than anything. That's even more important than falafel.
I agree.
So what advice do you have for young women looking to become part of the food culture and lead a balanced life? Like, what would you say to someone? I know that's a loaded question. Go to law school.
I know. I don't know. I really believe that for me, it was a lot of like faith that if you really don't listen to anyone, it's like really to believe in what you're doing. And unless you're doing really shitty food, but
well, then there's nothing to believe in.
But it's I always say that to every cook, and not just woman, to every cook is one of the things, and that's the problem with all chefs. We all like full of egos, and it's like a lot of them like stop learning because they think they know already everything. So it's like all in them. So that's something I always said. When you go to a new kitchen, you don't know nothing. If other cooks come to you and show you how to cut an onion, you said thank you, because maybe I'm still learning different way to cut onion, I swear. And I'm in a business for almost 20 years, and I still will ask my dishwasher what he think about that dish, because I will, you know, like, it's still, I'm not trying to learn from everybody, because there is a lot of learning from you know, you can still learn nonstop.
And that's what keeps you interested.
Yeah, Absolutely. There is many ways to do it. That's what I'm thinking today. Like, you don't need to choose between a family life to this career. It's difficult and it's hard. And for me, back in the days, I remember when I go to Tabla, he said, I'm sorry, we don't have a position. And I said, okay, can I work for free for a week? I will work for free. And you see, I'm sure you would hire me after. And he hired me after 3 days. That was me. I was very pushy, very Israeli, you know, like I want it, so I would do whatever, even if I need to work for free. And then I would come, when I work at Tabla, I would come in my day off and work or in the butchery or in the dessert station, so I would learn other things. And when I asked the chef to promote me to Inter Mathieu, for example, and he said, it's always about payroll. It's still about payroll. And I said, you know what? I will come in my day off, so you don't need to pay me. I will learn the station and then you move me. And that's what I did.
Right.
I want to move up. I will work. Kids getting very spoiled today. It's a different era. It's totally different.
So for you, I think you would say to a young woman that it requires focus.
Absolutely.
And a tremendous, obviously, desire to succeed. And also just an acknowledgement that it's not a linear path.
No.
There are going to be a lot of curves in the road and lots of obstacles to overcome. And just you either have faith that you'll figure out a way to overcome those obstacles or you won't.
Absolutely.
All right. So now it's time for the special sauce All You Can Answer buffet. What's in your desert island fridge?
Oh, wow. Harissa, preserved lemon, frozen couscous, because I can eat it on the fire, slowly, steam it. Hopefully. Going to be a fridge. Going to be some rice. What are going to have there? Oh, a lot of things. Fridge going to be packed.
That's okay.
Packed with vegetable. A lot of different vegetable. Artichoke. So I can cook it also on a fire. Cauliflower. That's a mandatory. Some labneh or yogurt. Because yogurt, I can make labneh easy.
That's
good. That's enough, right?
Yeah.
I can live by that
for
a while.
You can live for a long time with that fridge. So this is a tough one for you, I know. But who's at your last supper, no family allowed?
How many people I can invite?
This five.
That's not enough.
All right.
My
dinner, six.
My dinner are much bigger.
All right. So
we'll
give you six.
Wow, this is hard. Edgar Keret, we start with him.
Who?
Edgar Keret is a writer. He's amazing.
He's an Israeli writer.
Yes. Very good. Funny one. Edgar Keret, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Yeah, I liked him. Otolenghi Yotam, I like him.
Otolenghi is the fabulous Middle Eastern chef in London.
And I will have Sammy too, so he's not getting salted.
Sammy is his partner.
Yeah, partner.
Got it.
Business partner. David Bowie, I bring him back?
Are you kidding? Of course.
Yeah, David Bowie would be great.
All right. I like this. This is a very interesting table. First of all, I like the idea of David Bowie and Robin Williams at the table.
Right?
Wouldn't that be great?
I loved Robin Williams. He used to come to Taim a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
So what are you eating at this Last Supper?
The same meal I did the last few times with the couscous, because it's something new that people are not aware of, and every time I do this kind of food, people like.
All right,
raving.
So what is it?
So it's a lot of weird names. So I'm sorry, I'm gonna.
Okay, but you can explain.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a real couscous on the middle, and then I'm gonna have lamb tagine with a lot of dried fruit.
Lamb tagine with a lot of dried fruit.
Yeah, really nice. Not too sweet, because I'm gonna put some chili inside. Then it's gonna be a dish It's called tbecha. And tbecha is a meat with, I'm going to put butter beans and put small, tiny peeled potato. And the sauce is sweet chard that you cook for 40 minutes slowly with a little bit oil and break it down. So that's that. So it's a green sauce. And then I'm going to have the mafroum that I explained earlier with the stuffed potato. And then I'm going to have Moroccan vegetables. So it's a vegetarian for the vegetarian. I'm going to have some spicy Moroccan fish that called khraime. I'm going to have some condiments around. So I'm going to have chirchi, which is like mashed pumpkin with garlic.
Okay.
I'm going to have messayer, which is like fresh vegetable with only salt and lemon, with kohlrabi and peppers, all like sticks, pieces of cauliflower. I'm going to have matbucha, which is like the tomato and garlicky sauce. What else I have there?
That sounds awesome. No sweets.
Yeah, I'm going to do probably for sweets, I'm going to do like, I think it's called maancha, which is a roll like a snake of stuffed like walnuts and some rose water with phyllo, a lot of peppers or phyllo, and it's like a snake, and then you bake it all together and it sits with on a kind of a baklava sauce. So that's something I did before that was delicious.
So what's your guilty pleasure? Do you have a guilty food pleasure?
I don't
pleasure?
Have guilt. That's the thing.
If you don't have guilt, then it's okay.
No guilt. Why I should have guilt?
Yeah, so So what are you proud of then? I mean, this is not, you don't have to feel guilty about it.
I don't know. I like a lot of sweets. I like all kind of food. I personally try not to eat too much fried or too much red meat. And I eat much healthier than I used to before. You know, you get older and you're like more aware and more aware. And
so what sweet would it be? Would it be an Oreo? Would it be a Haagen-Dazs bar?
I'm not fanatic about it. I love ice cream. I do, but it's not like,
Right.
I'm a definitely chocoholic. Like, I need chocolate every day, at least a tiny piece.
So do you have a favorite chocolate bar? Not fancy, obviously.
Not fancy. The one that I think it's Lindt. And
yeah.
Stefan always bring it, and it's milk. Usually I always have dark chocolate.
So a Lindt milk chocolate
Milk
bar.
Chocolate with almonds.
Yeah.
So that's what something we always have at home. And I always, when he brings like 3 bars, and I always look at him like, why? And then I finish it. That's why.
Got it. So what do you cook when there's nothing in the house to eat?
I do a lot of different things. So if I have some ground beef in the freezer, which we usually do, I will do kind of a, Steph is doing the shepherd pie, but I do sinaya, you know sinaya?
Uh-uh.
So it's basically I will put potato in a batter, mashed potato, and then this amazing ground beef that have ba'arat and onion, a little bit jalapeno, some of even currants, a little bit currants or pine nuts. And it's a very nice spiced meat. And then on top I will make tahini sauce, but very, very thick, and do a tiny layer of it, and then I go and bake it.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty sophisticated for there's nothing in the house to eat, though.
Really?
But, no, I
that's
mean...
That's easy.
Yeah, it sounds good.
And you can
good.
Do bulgur. If I have a little bit bulgur, I just soak the bulgur a little bit for like maybe 10, 12 minutes, and then put a little bit olive oil, some salt and pepper, and put it on the bottom, and then bake it, and the bulgur get like crusty. So you have the bulgur, and it's absorb all the sauce from the meat, and then the tahini on top, some parsley, some salad on the side.
Who would you love to have a one-on-one lunch with? Just to pick his or her brain.
Yeah, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams?
Yeah. He's a little bit shy, so it will be a little bit tricky, but and he's dead too. That's even trickier.
But no, that we've set that aside as it's a non-issue.
Great, I love it.
All right, so that's great. Well, thank you, Einat Admini, for sharing your special sauce
with us.
Thank
you for having me. That was fun.
And it was a pleasure, you know, having spent so much time in your restaurants and eating so much of your falafel and sabich. It was great to actually have an opportunity to sit down for a extended period of time and get to talk to you because you have a fascinating life story. And people should go to Taim's, which are coming soon to a city near you. They're now in New York, and there's a Taim truck still. And Bar Bolonat and Bella Busta are two great restaurants. And the book, right? The book, there's a new book coming, right?
Yeah, it's going to take time, but yeah.
So there's no shortage of things that Einat is doing at any given moment. So thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.